This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Lynn Mark, and you're listening to Pressing Matters Right Now, the show where we discuss issues driving the press and making headlines around the world. Now, last week, we celebrated the first anniversary of our change in government, but let's also not forget that today is the 50th anniversary of the 1969 racial riots. So joining us today to talk about this is Mohsin Abdullah, contributing editor at The Edge. Welcome to the show, Mohsin.
Thank you.
So let's start with what do we know about the incident? Because it's been 50 years, and actually I think knowledge of the 1969 riots is primarily anecdotal nowadays. So what do we know about it?
Well, it involved, what should I say, to be blunt about it, Malays and Chinese. The reason, some people say it's political, which has been denied by the authorities for years. But the fact is, there was this clash and lives were lost, property were lost. It was a very sad day for the whole country. And to me, there were no winners. We all lost on that day. That's how I see the situation.
And a lot of the repercussions from that, from 1969, can still be felt in society today. But why is it that we don't know more about it?
For one, over the years, you know, I mean, there are two sides of the story. It's good that people don't remember, you know. It's good that, meaning we have moved on. We don't hold any grudges. That is the good side of it. But on the other hand, if the young, especially the younger generation, who are not aware of the whole thing, then how do we learn from that mistake? We made mistakes, obviously. Mm-hmm. So if we don't learn from that, chances are we can repeat that mistakes, and hopefully it won't turn out as violent as it was in 69. But you know, in every incident, usually bad incidents, the thing is, we hear people saying there are lessons to be learned, right? Mm-hmm. But if you don't know that incident itself, what lessons are we going to learn from that? So to answer your question, I don't know why it has become. Well, maybe over the years, people forget, and it has always been the case that we don't want to remember, yeah. So let it go and all that kind of thing. But the sad thing is, we are, most of the time, especially during elections, you know, we are forced to remember by people who in all probability, they were not around at that time. But it has been used to frighten people, to get support as well, and usually to bully, I would say. You know, that's a sad part of it.
Yeah,
and it's still happening now. You got people saying, telling, okay, telling the Chinese, you know, if you don't behave, you mess with me, you know, this thing will happen. May 13 will happen. Well, I see it like when people say that, meaning you are the victor. See, if you don't, I was victorious. So if you don't behave yourself, you'll be defeated again. That kind of thing, you know. But the thing is, like I said earlier, nobody won. We all lost. Mm-hmm. So why should we continue with all this kind of threatening remarks and all that? That's the thing.
And so May 13th, 1969 was very significant in Malaysian politics because it led to our first Prime Minister, Tunku Abdul Rahman, stepping down to be succeeded by Tun Abdul Razak. It got to that point. But how prevalent is the memory of May 13th in political discourse more recently? Because you've been a political commentator for a long time, and how often did you see that kind of sentiment coming out towards the community?
Quite often, especially during when Barisan Nasional was holding power. Most of the time it comes from UMNO. And every now and then, you know, when there's some issues or some things to do, things to gain, party election, UMNO General Assembly, this kind of thing crop up.
Mm.
Sometimes directly mentioning 13 May, sometimes no mention, but you know what they're talking about. That's a sad part, really. I would say it's very sad, this kind of thing happening even now. Even now, okay, now we have this. The word May 13 is not mentioned, right? Mm-hmm. But race and religion, yeah?
Yeah.
And Rome Statute. Look at that, you know, and when there's this accusation of the current government not strong enough to defend the religion. Yeah, you don't have this, what they call this, Malay Muslim soul, so to speak. Semangat Melayu Islam. Mm. So this is, in a way, pushing the government to a corner. And this kind of rhetoric is still being floated and daily, even now as we speak.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you and I, we know it's about politics, but there are some people who say, no, this is the truth. So that is the, I won't say it's irony, that's the situation. Mm. And the Prime Minister was asked, I think, recently, 2 days ago, what, you know, about this, and he said, yeah, you got to tread it carefully. Yeah, like, you know, you got to take care of all races.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they're pushed to a corner, as I said.
So, from your perspective as someone who's been watching the governments of the day, do you find that this new government is paralyzed by the fear of a repeat of 1969?
No, I wouldn't say that. You know? And I don't think Malaysians, young or old, current Malaysians, I mean, people now, would go that way, this violent way. But that does not mean we don't have this
like a specter hanging over our head, right?
There's no interracial problem. There are, you know, but as to say that the government is paralyzed, no. But the government is like probably, as I've written a number of times, caught between a rock and a hard place. So they got to get the balancing act right, you know. Take care of these people, this community. But at the same time, the opposition, you know, are harping on it. And in a way, there are some of the Malay community are taken in by all this talk of Islam under threat and that kind of stuff.
And Pakatan Harapan has not managed to combat that narrative so far?
They're trying to, as I said, so far they're just sort of...
firefighting.
Yeah, firefighting is one. And just to consolidate and pacify and all that. There have been calls even among ordinary Malaysians, you know. My friends of mine even say, you know, they're just over a casual conversation saying, how come the government is not hard enough to do all these kind of things? But I suppose the government is still, I mean, wants to keep to their promise of freedom of expression and all that. So you have people, maybe if abusive is not, abuse is the right word to use, I say abusing that freedom.
We're speaking to Mohsin Abdullah, contributing editor at The Edge, in conjunction with the 50th anniversary of the 1969 racial riots. After this, we'll be delving a little bit more into his personal experience, so stay tuned to The Morning Run, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to The Morning Run. I'm Lynn Mark, and you're listening to Pressing Matters, the show where we discuss issues driving the press and making headlines around the world. And today, we're speaking to Mohsin Abdullah, contributing editor at The Edge, about his experiences during the 1969 racial riots, which happened 50 years ago today. So, Mohsin, how old were you during the 1969 riots, and what was it that you saw?
I was 14 years old. I was born and bred in Kampung Bahru. That's where it started.
Mm.
So on that day, 13 May was a Tuesday, and being Formed 2, I was in the afternoon session. Afternoon session would end usually 6:45. Yeah, but somehow on that day, we were allowed to go home at 5:30 or so, you know. And being kids, everybody happy going home early. But nobody knew. We didn't know why. So went home and took my bicycle, ride around as usual. You know, you could sense something was not right. And there was this movement of people here and there. And I took my bicycle. Instead of going home, I just rode and rode and rode until I reached, there was this T-junction. Red light. I stopped at the red light, turned right and saw cars burning. At least one car was on fire. It was in front of the Menteri Besar residence. Beside me, there were two Chinese gentlemen on a motorcycle. They were looking at the same direction, you know. And then, as when the light turned green, they moved towards the burning car, you know. At the time, I don't know. I don't know what made me did not follow them. It's just like, I just stood there and on my bicycle and look without moving. And these two Chinese gentlemen rode their motorcycle towards that area. And later, much later, when the government issued a official report on 30 May, these two gentlemen were mentioned in the report that they passed by that area, and they were set upon by people, and they were killed. It's, every time I think of it, it's like, it's really, it bothers me until now, you know, it's thinking that these two people were walking, although they were riding their motorcycle, they were walking to a death trap. Then I saw some youth, you know, with parang and all that, started to move and started to move towards Chow Kit area. And I didn't know what was happening. It's just that you can see a lot of people running here and there. And I just rode my bicycle. I didn't want to go home. That's the thing. I did not go home. I just took my bike and it's like a blank, you know. The mind is blank. Like you want to know what's happening and keep on running. But you know you could sense some danger. Yeah, but...
Mm.
And then you start seeing crowd and all kind of thing. And then FRU were already coming into the area with a loud hailer saying this curfew and all that. And that's it. And only then that I went home, and my house was near the mosque. The mosque became a relief center for Malays caught. People working in Jalan Tangku Rama or Jalan in nearby Jalan Raja Bot or Jalan Chow Kit couldn't go home. That's where they came. Took refuge in the mosque lah.
Yep.
That's for the Malays. Obviously, the Chinese had to go someplace else, you know. During that time, there were Chinese families in Kampung Bahru. There was this
a Chinese community.
Chinese community in Kampung Bahru, some areas in Kampung Bahru. Close friends of mine, schoolmates. Somehow they managed to escape, thank God. But they had a harrowing time. I did not see that, but later, when they told me the stories about how they were set upon, they were in the car driving off. They had to run, but the thing is, they ran because they were warned by the Malay neighbors. Thank God, nothing happened to them, but they lost properties and all that. But I would like to say this: you know, despite all that, they had a very bad experience, but none of them had any grudges against Malays.
Yeah.
To them, the Malays that attacked them were that Malays, that group, of not the whole thing. Because Michael Chang told me, and another guy, another close friend, Tay Jit Siang, he said also, they were warned by their Malay neighbours, you know, and then especially Jit Siang, there was this group about to attack their shop house, coffee shop. His father was operating a coffee shop. Another group of Malays went to stop these people from doing what they wanted to do. So what I'm trying to say is this. At the height of hatred, you know, that there's supposed to be hatred, you know, but there was compassion, there was love. That is one thing that I won't forget, you know.
Yeah. I guess those are the stories that we hear less about when we're talking about 1969. We don't hear so much about the communities banding together against these kind of outside sort of anarchic forces. But then again, May 13th is also something of a controversial subject to discuss. I mean, you can talk about it in a kopitiam, but when you're writing about it, then it can stoke a lot of responses. And I think you wrote an article on May 13th in The Edge a little while back, and that raised some pushback from UMNO particularly. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, the thing is, I quoted a friend of mine, Mike Chang. Yeah, we were both 14 years old, you know, but maybe late over the years, he had this opinion that, and I think a lot of people share his opinion, saying that May 13 happened because of the UMNO internal politics, power struggle, that kind of thing, to embarrass the Prime Minister then, who was Tengku Abdul Rahman. So that was a theory. So I wrote that. I wrote that, you know, and somehow some, I think in the local newspapers, Malay newspaper, asked for reaction from Khairi Jamaluddin, who was then UMNO. This was in 2012. He was UMNO youth chief. So obviously, as an UMNO youth chief, he got to play to the gallery. So he got angry. He got angry and say retract, and I mean saying I was not responsible and all that kind of thing lah. And when the really start the ball rolling, you know, and from the youth chief to his people to the wanita to the putri, everybody, and we were hauled in by the Home Ministry. To be fair, they asked us to explain, you know. But the thing is, that's just an opinion of someone that I quoted. But the bigger picture of the story is about no hatred. There's no hatred between these victims who were Chinese towards the Malays in general. That was the main theme of that article. But conveniently, that is forgotten, and this one was highlighted lah, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we got into some little bit of trouble here and there, but all's good. It turned out okay, finally.
So now, after we have seen a change of government, you know, a lot of people were saying immediately after GE14 that, oh, you know, you can threaten us with May 13th, but now we have May 9th to show that we can actually achieve something as a nation. So what are the stories, what are the lessons we can take from it, and how do we move forward from there?
Well, lessons, I don't want to go on a sermon kind of thing, you know, but I think everybody know their part. You know, let's just be ourselves. Let's be Malaysian lah, tolerant and all that. Don't fall into all this kind of trap. But it's just trap, meaning this race and racial and religious rhetoric. But that's easier said than done, because there are people who believe what they want to believe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a big problem there. So we can only hope that, you know, there are a lot of us Malaysians who reject all this kind of rubbish. So we just hope that the people who reject are more than the people who accept this kind of garbage, you know. And I would say the current generation or generation to come, we don't want to go that way anymore. I don't think there's going to be another 13 May. Hopefully I'm right. I don't think there will be issues, of course, but no, violence is not the way of the present or the future generation. I would say that.
Thank you so much for sharing your experiences with us, Mohsin. We've been speaking to Mohsin Abdullah, contributing editor at The Edge. And that's all we have on Pressing Matters on The Morning Run today. Stay tuned for the 10 a.m. news after this, followed by Enterprise at BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.